Hello, everybody. This is Tim Shum. Welcome to another episode of Fireside Chicago, where we host fireside chats with prominent leaders from Chicago's business community. I have a great guest today, Jay Rudman. Jay is the CEO of Topstep, formerly Topstep Trader. We go into his background a little bit. He's a serial entrepreneur. He's had multiple exits. He's started companies, led companies. He's actually not the founder of Topstep. So we got into that journey and how he eventually took over as CEO from the original founder and worked side by side with that individual. We get into the fintech landscape here in Chicago. Topstep is obviously a trading platform, which we'll get into. We talk about him taking over as CEO and some of the different avenues that he's taken to become successful there. We talk about the Chicago tech scene and many other topics. Hope you enjoy. Thanks again for listening. Jay Rudman, CEO, Topstep. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Tim. I'm so excited to be here. What an honor.
We've gotten to know each other over the last year or so, and I've always enjoyed our conversations. I thought this was just a likely next step so we could broadcast some of our dialogue out to the rest of the Chicago community for sure. For the folks that don't know Jay, why don't you just start off by giving a little backstory on you and maybe how you became the CEO of Topstep?
Oh, it's a great story. So happy to share. So I've had the good fortune of having started and sold a number of businesses, all within, you know, different industries, not all in this industry that I'm in right now, which is a unique story in itself. But when I sold my last business in 2014, a couple of things happened. One is that, like a lot of entrepreneurs, my head was down and I was so busy operating my business. And I came up and realized the ecosystem around Chicago had changed dramatically. There was a lot more venture money. There was a lot, you know, 1871 had started. There was just a tremendous amount of things bubbling up from Northwestern and UIC and U of C, et cetera. And I said, well, geez, I think the world has passed me by. I better try to catch up. So I started reconnecting with my network, which is a lesson learned. Never lose your network. And that was a hard lesson for me. But I started reconnecting with the VCs I knew, a bunch of fellow entrepreneurs, et cetera. And long story short, one of the individuals I knew connected me to the founder of Topstep. And it was a really interesting business. He was had some great traction. I don't mean to diminish all that he accomplished, but he didn't have a ton of experience to draw upon in terms of how to grow a business. And I offered my services pro bono for over a year. Just he and I as mentor, mentee, or as I like to call it, co-mentor, because admittedly, I was learning as much as he was along the way. But we, behind closed doors, chatting about business, chatting about life, chatting about the team, et cetera, hadn't met anyone else at Topstep. And eventually he said, hey, I'd like you to start working with the team. The team was very young, very small at the time, inexperienced, but incredibly passionate, incredibly energetic. And I said, sure. His name is Michael. I said, hey, Michael, I'm happy to help, but I got to start charging you for my time. So he said, well, why don't you come aboard, you know, as a W-2? And I contemplated that. And I really liked the business fundamentals. I liked working with Michael. And I thought there was a great opportunity for me to bring in some of those past experiences and lessons learned from my history into the business. And I did join, and just a little bit later, he asked me to actually run the business. So it's been just over 4 years since I took over as CEO of Topstep.
That's amazing. You hear the stories of startup happens, scale like series A, B, D, E, G, F, and then it's like, okay, the board's putting a Jay Rudman in place. Kind of like you hear those stories, but like the organic, hey, this is what's best for the business and this partnership is what's best for the greater good, I think is just a cool story.
Yeah, sure. It is. It doesn't happen as often as, you know, you wish for a couple of reasons. One is, you know, possibly hubris of founders. And I've been a founder, as I've already indicated, you know, three other times. So I get it. I've been in those shoes before. You know, maybe a little bit more gray hair and a little bit more, you know, experience has moved me past that hubris. But it's definitely out there. So it requires a lot of self-awareness. And until you get those institutional investors in, it's hard for that third-party perspective to kind of force you into that. And also, you know, that outsider or the you know, hired CEO or whatever you want to call them, has to sometimes tell the founder, you know, that their baby's not so pretty. And so a lot of people just want to shy away from even that inkling of reality.
Your other businesses that you started, hindsight being 2020, there were some successes along the way. I would imagine that there was ups and downs and all this kind of stuff. What were some takeaways from your previous experiences that, you know, maybe dating back to when you were doing some pro bono advisory consulting, it sounds like, that you just kind of saw, maybe even in yourself, that you were able to offer some mentorship to somebody else?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many. I think we could probably do a 6-hour program on that alone. But, you know, a few things is, one is that like a lot of entrepreneurs or founders step into a business thinking they'll figure things out as they kind of iterate through. And I was also that way, like, oh, unit economics, scale, you know, quality, I'll get there. I just have to prove myself in the market, get a little bit of MVP traction and figure it out. And that's true, kind of, you know, in a very sterile world, but you really only get one opportunity to make this thing work. And so you have to think about your businesses at scale. And I know that seems like a dream to many individuals who are scrapping for that first B2B customer, or trying to, you know, get their 100th B2C customer or whatever else it might be. But you really do have to think about it, because otherwise it's just a hobby. It's just, you know, a passion play. You really have to think about the business at scale. Another lesson that I've learned is that, you know, it's really easy to focus in on customers. And I'm not trying to diminish the importance of customers, but if you don't focus in on your team and the culture that you're building and the foundational values within your organization, it is so easy for your business to, as I say, you know, wobble. And then if that wobble becomes more pronounced and starts to go askew, and all of a sudden you can't even deliver the solutions and the quality that you're looking to deliver to the end user, because you don't have that internally. You don't have that stabilizing force. And, you know, you can read all the books and talk to all the, you know, accomplished professors or whatever, and they all talk about value and cultures and missions and visions. And, you know, you can easily put that aside and say, I'll get to that. But if you don't start with it, you are going to make so many mistakes because you don't have the foundation upon which to build. And so those are definitely two things that I brought to Topstep and have learned through multiple mistakes along the way.
Jay, maybe talk about the vulnerabilities of a founder. You know, like you mentioned, having self-awareness, and then you were able to provide a lot of value as an advisor to other companies, to Topstep. What are some of those like blind spots, vulnerabilities that you see in founders today versus maybe like when you had kind of started out?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. And I think that there's so much more for founders today for them to reach out to. I mean, first of all, the internet is obviously an amazing resource, and you can find a TED talk about almost anything that you want. So many, you know, secondary education opportunities out there that give away courses for free. So there's a lot of, you know, if you want to be a self-starter and learn on your own, you can. But I also think that one of the advantages Chicago has versus the coast, and maybe this is, you know, folklore, maybe it's truth, is that I find the Chicago community is much more of a giving community for the entrepreneur than it is on the coast. It's not a backstabbing community. If someone calls me or links in, you know, connects with me or drops me a note somehow, some way, I will always reply. Maybe not that moment, but I will certainly get back to them. And I don't find that was true when I started my business. I have a lot of gray hair. It was a long time ago. Those interconnections weren't easily available. But today it's out there and you can do it. And there's even the institutional establishments like the 1871s, and now ITA is part of it and Catapult's part of it and so much more, that they're really building a critical mass for people to find a comfortable home should they wish to associate with like-minded individuals and ask a lot of hard questions. And I'm actually quite jealous of people that are in the in that environment and have the youth to you know, to try to start businesses at this point in time, because I didn't have a lot of that support back then.
I've always had a lot of takeaways from our conversations, and a lot of the listeners know I'm in year three of my business. So I you know, what I've learned over time is it's a few poor decisions or rough emotional times that trickle down to my team, or missed opportunities where this thing could go sideways pretty, mm-hmm. pretty quick. Like business is hard. And whether it's mentorship, networking conversations, some of the awesome groups in Chicago that you had mentioned, advisors, or a founder just saying, hey, I might not be the person, like my skill set is this, I might not be the person to kind of take it to the next step. There's so many things that could go wrong in business if the plan is to grow. And we're all in it together. And there's, I found in the community, like there is some vulnerabilities there. You know, I think it's, people start with what their challenges are, not how awesome they're doing, right? Or, hey, I got a question for you about this. Hey, Jay, you've been doing this longer than I have. Can I pick your brain on this? I would venture to say you're spot on about the community, and it's very encouraging. And doing this myself, and it's kind of scary. It's just nice to be able to know that other people are going through the same stuff and might be at different phases that I am.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. I love that word vulnerability, to be able to raise your hand and say, I just don't know the answer and I'm looking for some advice. And people often do it when it gets to, you know, technical, right? I don't know how to raise the Series A, or I don't know how to talk to the attorneys about, you know, master service agreement or whatever else it might be. But it's also like when that employee comes into your office, you know, pre-COVID or in the Zoom world that we're in, and is in tears because, you know, their father or mother is, you know, gravely ill, or like, how do you handle those circumstances? And there's no book about that. So it's, you know, to be vulnerable, to raise your hand and basically say, I faced something previously and I need some guidance on this is wonderful. And I will never, ever, ever give advice. I'm just not a big believer in advice, but I will say, you know what? I have an experience either as an analog or something exactly congruent that I can tell you what I did and take from it whatever you believe.
Those conversations steer people left or right, and they're super impactful. I think the more of those that we could have in Chicago, the better the community is going to be, for sure. Let's switch gears. Let's talk Top Step a little bit. I have a little bit of a financial services background, did an internship at Merrill Lynch, so pretty much an industry expert. But I've gotten it on. I'm kidding. I don't really know much about the industry. I do know about Top Step from getting to know you, but for maybe the layman or folks that don't know about Top Step in your industry, let's talk about Top Step a little bit.
Sure. So we're in the trading space, and you know, that word trading probably means 1,000 things to 1,000 people. So what's interesting about Chicago is that it has a long history in trading. And, you know, maybe for people that are relatively new to Chicago, didn't know that, you know, we have the CME and the CBOT, and, you know, we have a ton of exchanges here. It really was the beginning of, especially the commodities on the future side, right? Futures contracts is basically, I'm going to buy something today for delivery in the future. That's the easiest way to describe it. And we probably have all seen, you know, the mayhem on the exchange floors from days gone by, right? You had these risers and generally men. I don't want to sound, you know, gender biased in any way, but it was generally men who were on these risers yelling and screaming and doing various hand signals. And what's interesting about that old industry is that basically it's been decimated by screen trading, right? You can be, anyone can trade on the screen. But going back to those days about when the exchanges were still a thriving, you know, community of folks who were trading, it was a wonderful way to build an apprenticeship model where if you are a young kid like yourself coming out of college and you wanted to be a trader, you could get a job on the floor and you wore one of those beefy coats with, you know, the big tags and the tie, and whatever else it might be. And you would start off as a runner, clerk. I mean, these people are generally just grabbing tickets or running between spots. I mean, it's that mindless of a task, but it was a great way to get exposed to the industry. And then guess what? You then got to sit behind a desk, and that desk was where you actually received the tickets and actually, you know, recorded things. And then maybe as you built your knowledge and awareness about the industry, you could actually work your way maybe into one of those pits. And someone would let you trade a little bit. You know, you had to go through some certifications. I'm not trying to minimize the, you know, the credibility that was required to get in there. But eventually, as you became a better and better trader, you actually rose up in those pits until, guess what? You got to the top step. And hence the name of our organization, our company is it's Top Step Traders, because the ones at the top step had the greatest line of sight, greatest visibility, were highest up, were generally trading the biggest books. And those are the folks that, you know, were the most professional at the traders. So now let's fast forward. Screen trading basically says, hey, Tim, you have $25,000 in your nest egg and you want to go, you know, place a trade on, you know, the mini S&P futures contract. And you're like, great, let's go do it. I know nothing about trading mini S&P, but I'm going to go do it, or oil or gold or, you know, the agriculture products, whatever they are, you can do it. Like, trust me, any brokerage is going to take your 25. And guess what? Unfortunately, the data suggests retail traders who are novice in the industry start with 25,000 and 6 months later end up with relatively nothing, because there is no that on-ramp like there used to be in the exchange world. And what TopStep is really doing is trying to slow that down and provide that on-ramp into the online trading world. And the way we do it is we've gamified it. We basically allow you and anyone else that wants to come in a simulated environment, practice your trading against live markets. So you're using live data. This is not old data that you know how to game. This is live data, but you're playing with, you know, Monopoly money, not your own money. And we have thousands, if not tens of thousands, of traders playing the game every single day against live markets, but not losing their own capital in the markets. And what's really cool, this is when it gets very, very interesting, is that we're watching all those traders using, you know, kind of a god mode or administrative mode. And at any point in time, for those traders that can adhere to our risk parameters and, you know, achieve a certain profit target, we actually graduate them out of the game and we give them our own capital to trade. So they don't have to put their own 25 into the market. They get to trade our money. And it kind of just really flips the whole brokerage model upside down.
Are most of your customers individuals, or is this used by like groups that are training their junior traders? It's mostly individuals that want to get into trading. Wow.
It's retail traders, right? And the retail trading renaissance has really taken off. You know, there's been a lot of things that have occurred. Is, you know, COVID actually required people to sit home, sit in front of screens, and possibly, you know, if they're unfortunately were, you know, didn't have a job anymore, they were looking for either a primary or secondary source of income. They were looking for new skill sets. Some people wanted to learn how to play the piano. Some people wanted to, you know, learn how to paint, and some people wanted to learn how to trade. And so we definitely have benefited from to that. And also just the gig economy, right? You know, pre-COVID, people were driving Ubers, people were driving Postmates, people were doing, you know, TaskRabbit, whatever they were doing. But they also were saying, hey, maybe I can make a couple $100 a day trading, because, you know, there's only really two ways to make money in this world. You either have to trade your labor or you have to trade your capital. Mm-hmm. And we're just on the other side of that equation. The gig economy is trade your capital, not your labor.
I had a friend growing up, and his dad would drive us to all of our practices. And every time I was over at the house during the summer, he was always there in the basement, you know, we're like working. I'm using quotes for some of the podcast listeners. And at one point I was like, what does your dad do? My dad has to commute, go to work and come back. And he's like, oh, he's a trader. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I thought he was like playing solitaire Minesweeper for just like hours and hours and hours. But
right.
As I've grown up, I mean, this is a serious, huge industry where, yeah, people are making independent income. They're learning a craft. They're learning the financial markets. And yeah, you don't have to necessarily grow up on a trading floor with a family member that gives you that internship. Like you can do this. And it sounds like there's a lot of profiles of people that are jumping on.
100%. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay. So where's TopStep Trader today? And what's the vision? Where would you like to take it to maybe a future employee that might be listening to this?
No. Yeah. Come aboard. We need you. where we are today is that we have basically tapped into probably three markets. Those three markets are experienced traders. So you've been doing trading for 3 to 5 years. You're looking for an opportunity to trade someone else's money in addition to your own. The second thing is we've tapped into people who, as I hinted at, Chicago is the birthplace for futures contracts. So we offer two trading assets. One is futures contracts. The other one is foreign exchange. So you can trade, you know, USD versus euro, et cetera. And the third thing is we've largely focused in on English-speaking traders. So we have a big trading community in US, Canada, Australia, Ireland, UK, even Germany, and other places that have a high, you know, degree of English speakers. So future states, which is a great question, Tim, is changing all of that, right? We basically want to find more novice traders, all those folks that, you know, have been riding GameStop or trading on Robinhood and are really interested in what this trading community is. I'm trading Apple, but I don't really know what the heck I'm doing other than just riding the bull run. So we would love to find more novice traders, and we're trying to do that by additional education along that path. The second thing is that we want to open up additional assets like crypto and equities and options and others, you know, to make it more comprehensive of an offering to all those folks that enjoy trading and want to dabble in a very safe environment. And then lastly is we just want to make this thing global. I mean, we know that there's big trading communities in many areas of the world. Southeast Asia is really popular. Brazil is very popular. Even in Western Europe, for the non-English speaking countries, very popular. And we just want to tap into that by localizing our products and localizing the languages that we offer.
Let's talk about the fintech space just as a category for a second. You had mentioned, hey, decades ago, like this is how trading was done. It was manual. It was pieces of paper. It was yelling. You know, and then you mentioned, okay, this is now kind of going online, but it gets even more complex than that, right? Like there's so many like little aspects to the fintech community. You mentioned Robinhood. Mm-hmm. It's getting, you know, there's more data available to hedge funds now. Mm-hmm. There's the entire payment space from consumer and businesses. Like it's huge. It's yeah. huge. And it feels like, you're right, like Chicago, in terms of like futures contracts for commodities, that maybe turned into, okay, Citadel started, or like now, mm-hmm. hey, Morningstar is here. But maybe like just talk about like Chicago's tech community and how the fintech kind of landscape fits, because obviously you have the coast, especially New York City, where there's a lot of that activity as well.
Absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head is that, you know, fintech used to be, or the financial services industry used to be for, you know, the big dogs, the big brands, and it wasn't well democratized for the individual. But, you know, this changed everything, right? The phone is now giving you data to do things. And, you know, there are sophisticated individuals who are writing algorithms to do all sorts of crazy, you know, rebalancing of portfolios in real time. And then there's just the dabbler who just basically says, I want to take my, you know, 529 or 401k or, you know, my little bit of, you know, side money and play some interesting, I'll call them bets, but it's truly not a bet. You know, it's an educated bet, that's for certain. But because of the phone and because of, you know, this democratization, there's been a flood of companies. And to your point, the fintech spectrum is comprehensive. It's probably doing it injustice to even call it fintech, because you do have payments, you have trading, you have insurtech, you have ed tech, you have all sorts of things in there. And we've seen some great successes here in the Chicago community. And, you know, I'm so happy for those folks in the fintech ecosystem in Chicago that have had some successes. You know, since we're recording this, you know, recency effect, there was a big exit for Tasty Trade, or Tasty, I think they go by. And they've done an amazing job. And where they really were successful is they were able to, my words, not theirs, is like Frankenstein, a bunch of pieces together, because they started off as a content play, and then they brought in technology platform, and then they brought in brokerage, and then they bring in exchange with small exchange. And they've done a great job of bringing together a true complete delivery system to the end user. M1 Financial is another great success here in Chicago. And why I'm highlighting just a couple of those is what we need. And this is, you know, this is a pattern recognition of what's happened in the West Coast, is you need a few successes. Those successes will draw in additional capital. That additional capital will bring in additional, you know, skilled labor. That additional skilled labor will enable businesses to scale. And when businesses scale, there will be more liquidity events, and the cycle will just perpetuate itself. And so I'm very excited for their wins, not only because they're, you know, peers of mine and we connect quite frequently, but also because of what it foretells for Chicago's future.
Yeah. If you, you know, take a look at like the history books, there were some pretty good fintech wins. I mean, this is Tom Smosnoff's second exit in fintech. David Kalt, founder of Reverb, he had a previous exit in the options space
in
as
options.
Well. I believe we talked about Morningstar. You know, there's a few, but I wouldn't say that, you know, community is categorized as a financial services hub nonetheless. But to your point, some of these exits will yield other exits. More employees that understand that space working for these companies will spin off and kind of do other things based on what they've learned. You mentioned like 2014, I believe you said, you started to pick your head up and network a little bit, look around the Chicago tech ecosystem. How would you seen it grown since then? And maybe kind of categorize what you saw around that time.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, as I've already alluded to, I went to Booth from a graduate school. And during that networking time, I went back to Booth and, you know, their Polsky Center for Entrepreneurship. And I know Northwestern has a great one, and UIC and DePaul, and all of them do. So not trying to marginalize theirs, but I just know Polsky best. I went down there and started talking to, you know, current MBA students. And when I got my MBA from there, I'm going to age myself, back in the late 90s, everyone wanted to go into, you know, basically general management, go work for Procter & Gamble. They wanted to go work for consulting, so McKinsey, Bain, BCG, or they wanted to go to, you know, one of the big banks, Goldman, JP Morgan, whatever else it might be. And I remember going to Career Services and basically said, hey, this internet thing is pretty cool. I want to go, you know, figure that out. And their jaw dropped. They had no answer to that. It's a totally different world down there. That's really where I'm trying to drive to, is when I went back in 2014, boy, every student there was, and maybe, you know, entrepreneurship has been glamorized and romanticized and, you know, and I respect that, but they all were incredibly eager to not only work for maybe some of the, you know, later stage tech like Salesforce or Google or Apple, but also early stage and basically saying, I want to start something myself. So just that as a microcosm for the larger ecosystem of saying that the grad schools and the ramp people wanted to take out of grad school and into the business community was so dramatically different. Sure, there were still bankers and consultants, but there was a tremendous amount of individuals that were saying, I want to start something. And then what's nice is that there was a lily pad for them to hop to, because they could go to, you know, the 1871s. They could go to, you know, other places like that in Chicago and find a home of like-minded individuals that can support them both emotionally, but also with the tool set that they'll need to be successful.
It's funny to hear you say people were going to get an MBA to like start something and like pay themselves zero. And, but you know, I would always think of MBA as like, all right, secondary education. You start to see the statistics of salary increases from there and what that could mean for you. But yeah, people are chomping at the bit to innovate and have their own story. And I think, like, thank God that there's a lot of that activity going on in Chicago, because that's the underpinning of future growth and innovation and the next Tasty Trade and the next Groupon and the next Grubhub for sure.
100%. I mean, I agree with you. I think it's a very expensive way to incubate an idea, but you know what? You get the professors, you get the support system, you get like-minded peers who also could buy into the passion and the mission that you believe. And so I guess maybe over the lifetime of, you know, what you're going to invest in a business, it's not so expensive, especially when you can, you know, detach from the regular day and really put your head down and focus. But, you know, to me, the ROI is a suspect.
So we obviously the pandemic happened in 2020, had a huge impact on a lot of people's lives. There was a lot of people laid off in the community. Unfortunately, there was a lot of coast-founded companies that were setting up shop here and creating a lot of job activity. And those salaries were dumped right back into the economy, going to all the restaurants, going to all of the service providers, going into real estate and taxes for education and the like. And then that just like basically overnight dismantled in 2020. And we're seeing a rebound here now. What do you see as maybe some, keeping that idea in mind of keeping Chicago great, attracting more talent? We took a little bit of a step back. I think we're going to take a giant step forward, but how do you categorize where we're at today and maybe some opportunities within this COVID environment that may present themselves to help out the ecosystem?
Yeah. So I love Chicago. I moved here in 94 and I think I'm a lifer. But Chicago has some challenges, right? I mean, it's basically it's flyover country for a lot of folks. It is a high tax environment. It has had some, and rightly so, some civil unrest over the last, year or two. There are basically, two worlds in Chicago. You have a north side and you have a south and west side. And I'm giving back any and every way possible to try to help correct all those things. Because again, I'm a lifer, I love Chicago, and there's no better place to be if you ask me. But we're experiencing that. Like, we have a labor pool at Top Step who's very young. They don't view their current residence, either as a rental or as a owner, they don't view that as a 12-month residence anymore. They view that as, 4 months, 6 months, whatever else it might be, compared to our parents who basically, worked until they were 70 and then went to Florida or Arizona. Mm-hmm. So we definitely have some headwinds we have to fight against. But I also think we have some comparative advantages, right? We have so many, I've already alluded to it a number of times, so many wonderful universities here to draw upon, not only just the students, but the professors and, their venture groups and everything else that they're supporting through their new venture challenges, et cetera. We have domain expertise, be it, financial services, be it CPG, be it electronics. I mean, there's still a lot. I mean, Motorola, you ask the younger generation what that brand means, but they don't know it, but there's still a lot of technology and, folks walking around.
Telecom, Lucent, Telabs, 100%. Device. That's right.
100%. So if we can figure out how to tap into that, I'm highly confident that, Chicago has an incredibly bright future. And I'm a big believer in that we all should think about not only developing, our own talents and our own team's talents, but also in all the underserved community talents, because there are some incredibly bright, passionate people there that just do not have the right opportunity just yet. And if we can provide them that opportunity, I think we're, sitting on a powder keg.
I think so. We just went from 20% unemployment to 6% pretty much overnight. We're recording this early March 2021. I would hope that that continues. And then some of those positive steps forward that we took a little bit of a step back and can continue. It might look different, though. We're in the recruiting space. We're dealing with companies, tech, non-tech. And, there's just a different landscape of letting your employees work remotely on an ongoing basis. Whereas I feel like the downtown business district was kind of a hub for some mm-hmm. of these communities and collaboration and things like that. You have organizations that are opening up their hiring practices to be remote anywhere. So they're hiring people in Texas, they're hiring people in California. It might look different, but I think we got to adapt to make sure that we, can continue some of this positive momentum, pandemic or not.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Now, let me just, bring out 2 points on that. The other change is I hope they're all, all these new hires are not going to all be white and male, right? I'd love for that to be something that we can certainly solve. And then the other thing is, this work from anywhere, the borderless hiring or whatever else. It goes back to what I spoke of earlier, just culture. Like, if you don't have culture and values, it ain't going to work. No matter if I hire someone remotely and I don't have a strong enough culture to keep them tethered to the passion and the mission and the vision that we're trying to accomplish here at Top Step or anywhere else, it's just going to flounder. And so that's why you have to start with the foundational pieces, and then you can layer on that hire from anywhere.
I came from a company I was at for 10 years, got into management, then leadership. And that was everyone's in the office early, late. I had to lead by example in that kind of environment. And when I left to do this entrepreneurial thing, I was a little burnt, and I enjoyed having the flexibility to work from home. But when I look back at all those conversations, whether it be training or you know, just because I was there with the team, like in it every single day, you could kind of pick up on things if someone's having a tough time, if they're down, if something's going on at home, have those conversations, grab a cup of coffee. And you can't miss out on those if you have a remote environment. You have to work around that. Otherwise, I think what I'm seeing now is like, it's just easier to quit on your employer. It's just easier. It's less emotional ties to it. You know, you don't feel like as much as part of the community remotely. It's going to be something that folks that are doing the remote thing have to kind of work around. There's probably some place in the middle for safety and other reasons, but I think you're right. Like if you don't focus on that, yeah, it might be easier to pick up a few people and get them on board or hire them in lower cost cities. But if you don't have that culture piece, things would go out of whack pretty quickly. And culture is strategy for breakfast, we've probably heard before.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what's happened is, you know, there was a playbook that you could fall upon. You know, you could say, oh, I've seen this before. I know how to handle this. And obviously that playbook has been thrown out the door. And so what I would advocate for everyone that's watching or listening to this thing is just experiment. Just keep trying things. Like, just keep banging away at it and keep great data as to if it's working or if it's not. We've been experimenting with a bunch of different things, work from anywhere policies. We've migrated to a 4-day work week to try to alleviate the pressures and stressors that our team has felt. We've introduced some neighborhood offices. Like, Hey, if there's a WeWork in your neighborhood, great. You know, if there's a Regis, great. You know, do it. Let's give you a budget is necessary for that to happen. So you can still leave your 600 square foot studio apartment and feel like you're, you know, have a place to, you know, rub shoulders with at least one, if not two of your peers. Like we are just trying anything and everything as long as we have the data to support, you know, continuing with that investment.
I love it. I'm thinking about a lot of things that I've tried or I need to try or I've thought about trying. And yeah, you're right. Like I would walk around the office and like that would be Tim time with everybody. And we might not talk work all the time and personality mirror everybody and meet people where they are that day based on who you're speaking with. And like doing it in this environment, you know, I've tried, we don't have Slack, we have Click, but just taking an hour just to hit everybody with something. Make sure that they know that I'm in their corner, I'm there, I'm watching, I'm listening. If they need something else, hop on a call. Blocking off days for one-on-ones, it's a lot of time because there's not other stuff you can do during that time, but that's very impactful time. I think you're right. Like if we miss out on culture and we just chalk this up to, oh, it's the pandemic and everyone gets it, you're going to start to lose people. Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. You mentioned a couple things I think that are great. Like, hey, if there's an office, we'll pay for it. We'll think about other things for you.
We'll bring the office to you is how we phrase it. You know?
Yeah. Like in the city, there was a war for talent and then culture was top of mind. So it was perks. It was office environment. It was things you do outside of the office. There was so much investment in culture and in the confines of the office. What are you doing for your team now? Because like, that's going to be the next generation of this thing. When companies figure out how to like really take care of their people at home and make those same investments into kind of a different context, I think that's an opportunity for other people. But I don't think there's a playbook for that anywhere that I've seen.
There isn't, but you know, the old adage that people leave managers, not jobs, I think it still holds true. So we are investing and doubling down on our professional development, learning and training, you name it, to ensure that our leadership and our managers do anything and everything possible to be good at what we're asking them to do, which is really to manage and lead their teams. And so if we can educate and continue to optimize those relationships, I'm convinced that our culture will, you know, be enough to tether people to our business.
I agree. Very, very well said. Jay, thank you so much for the time. I'm going to stop it there. I know you're very busy and you've already given us so much time. I really appreciate it. For folks that want to learn more about Top Step or reach out, where can they find you? Where can they learn a little bit more about Top Step?
Yeah, it's really easy. Topstep.com. You can go there and we tried to do our best to explain it. If you have want to hit me up directly, you're welcome to on LinkedIn. It's Jay Rudman, spelled Rudman. As I said, I'm always open to connecting.
Thank you so much for the time, Jay. We'll talk soon.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for the opportunity, Tim.
Hey, everybody, this is Tim again. Thank you so much for listening to Jay Rudman and I's conversation today. There were so many different nuggets that I took away. Jay's obviously super sharp. He's been around the block a little bit, and he's doing great things at Top Step. If you haven't already, definitely follow us on Twitter or Instagram. It's at Fireside Chicago. You can type us into the search there and check us out. You'll get updates on all future shows and clips from past shows. We have a roster of awesome guests that we've already done the recording on. So make sure that you hit the subscribe button if you haven't done so already, and we'll look forward to seeing you at future shows.